This is Liner Note Leftovers, your weekly musical discovery hosted by 106.1 The GOAT's resident crate digger, Dan Soul. Let's dive in.
All right, my lovelies, it is time for the fourth episode of Liner Note Leftovers. We've made it to number four. I have gotten my arm unstuck from that tightly packed record crate long enough to give you five brand new stories from the history of rock and roll. All the liner notes and minutia about your favorite bands. And this week we've got some fun ones. We're talking about a certain rock star who's been shot, stabbed, electrocuted, beheaded, hung, killed on stage, and resurrected more times than I can count. But one time it almost went very, very wrong, and that's saying something. We're digging a little bit into the Liner Note Leftovers archives to talk about a name you've never heard before, Norman Pilcher, but he's important because he probably arrested your favorite rock star. More on that. Talking about my favorite musical instrument of all time, artillery. All that, and of course, more cowbell. Coming up on this week's Liner Note Leftovers, let's get into it. The history of rock and roll has no shortage of, how you say, unorthodox recording techniques. In the air tonight's iconic was created by swinging a talkback microphone around, so basically a glorified PA system. The watery drum sound on the original cut of Yellow Submarine was created by putting a mic in a prophylactic and then throwing it in a bucket of water. But once you start getting the artillery involved, maybe you're throwing caution to the wind. A little too much, but with great effect. And that's clear in Tool's 1993 release, Undertowed. Nobody was ready for this one, not only because it was this weird, eclectic mix of about seven or eight different genres. It stood out among the grunge and pop-dominated scene of the time, but part of it is the weird recording choices that were made for this album. First off, and this is the least weird here, like Adam Jones storing his guitar in the refrigerator because he wanted to preserve its life. I mean, it was a vintage 1976 Marshall, so you really want to. Apparently, that was enough to keep it fresh. And keeping it fresh was important because when he was playing the track Intolerance, he would use an Epilady face shaver to create that distinct guitar sound. And when that didn't work, he used a vibrator. True story, he used a vibrator. So maybe it was a good idea to keep that guitar fresh. But nothing comes close to the recording of Disgustipated, which involved the band shooting a piano with a shotgun, smashing it with sledgehammers, just going nuts on this thing. And you gotta think, what would the studio manager say if somebody's firing off guns at a piano in their studio? Surprisingly though, according to all reports, she was cool with it, as long as they cleaned up their mess afterwards. However, apparently they didn't do super duper well because numerous bands who recorded after them at Sound City in Van Nuys, California, said that they found shotgun holes in various locations around. But I mean, it's a shotgun. It's hard to clean up after. True punk rock purists will also know that on the track Bottom, Henry Rollins does a spoken word part, the absolute legend from Black Flag. There's a story, allegedly, that it's because Rollins got into a massive poker debt with the rest of the band that he had to do this bit to pay it off. But if you know anything about Henry Rollins, wears the same t-shirt and pair of jeans his whole life, only eats eggs, rice, and protein, and spends every other waking dollar he has on vinyl records, I don't know how much I believe that story. But who knows, maybe he was super in debt to his merch promoter and had to get that money somehow. But all of this weird stuff ended up working out. Songs like Sober became MTV video rotations, even though it was drastically different than anything you would see on that station at the time. So different in terms of lyrical content, different in terms of video content, and different in terms of sonic content, because holy man, they're shooting at stuff. Why don't I show you what I mean here? Because this is Tool's Disgustipated. There is a piano being tortured with sledgehammers, and a shotgun does get involved. See if you can pick out all those sonic sounds. Let's go. We'll be right back. The first rule of being in front of a live mic is that anything that can go wrong will. It's just the law of performance. And sometimes that does end in injury. I mean, you got Dave Grohl falling off stage, breaking his leg, and having to sit on that sick-ass chair for the rest of his tour. You got The Who, Metallica, Pink Floyd, almost blowing themselves up with their own pyrotechnics. But nobody could be outmatched in this regard quite like the king of shock rock himself, Alice Cooper. And anybody who knows anything about Alice Cooper's live stage show knows it is completely wild. It has to be when your inspirations are horror movies, vaudeville, Black Sabbath, and The Stooges. I'm talking about fake blood, huge boa constrictors. By the way, he still adopts boa constrictors to this day. His latest one is named Christopher Lee. Guillotines, electric chairs, and gallows. He's been killed on stage more times than you can count and resurrected just about the same. But this time, it got almost too real because April 7th, 1988, Alice Cooper's like, all right, we're gonna rehearse this stunt where we pretend to send me to the gallows. But don't worry, nothing bad will go wrong if we use this piano wire to hold my back up, separating my neck from the rope. Problem is, as any person who works in the trades will tell you, you guys know, you always gotta check your gear before going out. Because you can say it's never failed on you before, but it only takes once. And this was once. The piano wire was too old, it failed, and that rope got real close to Alice Cooper's neck. Luckily, his chin managed to catch it, but a roadie had to be quick thinking and cut him down. And that's the time that Alice Cooper almost died doing one of his shock rock stunts. Surprisingly, it was the only time. But of course, not to be deterred, Alice Cooper and the band, they replace the piano wire and they do the stunt again as normal. It's the man's modus operandi that when you're in the rock and roll game, you will get some bumps and bruises. Now, granted, you might say that this is more severe than a goose egg on the noggin, but I think he knows how to take precautions. He's been kicking it ever since and hasn't electrocuted, gallowed, or guillotined himself, so just a one-off. That's how it goes playing in a band.
But he's not ever gonna forget the time he was almost devil's food. Yeah, I know, lame pun. To distract from that, let's listen to some of this.
I knew your precious life, and I know you're dead. Another spirit on parole.
There's been a lot of great music memes throughout the years, right? I mean, you got the guy falling on ice that sounds exactly like Smells Like Teen Spirit. You got putting a bowl on your sibling's head and playing the drum beat to Back in Black. And you got my personal favorite. If you like listening to Radiohead, you might like listening to a therapist. But the granddaddy of them all has got to be the SNL send-up of Don't Fear the Reaper by the Blue Oyster Cult. Because even if you're unfamiliar with Saturday Night Live, that sketch, or Blue Oyster Cult in general, you have heard.
Guess what? I got a fever. And the only prescription is more cowbell.
Seriously, I bet you there's babies coming out of the womb, and before they know words, they're like, more cowbell! But like most memes, it has kind of ruined the lives of everybody involved with it. And by which I mean it has minorly inconvenienced them. Anybody who hasn't seen the sketch, basically, Will Ferrell, playing the made-up Gene Frinkle, is aggressively playing the cowbell, knocking in the band's ears, running into stuff, knocking over instruments, his guts flopping around. But still, producer The Bruce Dickinson says more cowbells needed. It's iconic. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. I won't spoil it for you. But what you should know is, don't mention it to the band or Christopher Walken anymore, because while it was funny and they loved it, they are sick of hearing about it a little bit. Because every time Blue Oyster Cult does a gig now, people are yelling, more cowbell, more cowbell. In fact, it gets yelled at bands now that don't even play Blue Oyster Cult songs. And Christopher Walken when he's just walking on the street. Also, you should know, Gene Frinkle is not a real person either. So you don't need to walk up to the band and offer your condolences because the sketch implies that he passed away. He's not real. He's not actually dead. But still, everybody in the band says from time to time, people will come up and say, hey, sorry about your friend Gene Frinkle. And by the way, the Bruce Dickinson? I know what you're thinking, Dan. It's the guy from Iron Maiden, isn't it? No,
No, he was a kind of an unknown guy before this sketch, because Don't Fear the Reaper was actually produced by David Lucas. Bruce Dickinson, the one we're thinking of here, was a guy who compiled a bunch of songs for a Blue Oyster Cult hit CD. The Saturday Night Live intern went out and bought that CD instead of Agents of Fortune. They got it wrong, and that's where the name Bruce Dickinson came from. But aside from those small things, it's been said that the actual cowbell player who played on Blue Oyster Cult was not entirely unlike Will Ferrell's interpretation. It's not entirely clear who exactly that was. There's conflicting accounts of who actually played it. But you gotta wonder how that song ever got made if the actual cowbell player was flailing around, playing in Eric Bloom's ear, falling over instruments, and his gut flopping out. It kind of ruins the spooky vibe of the song, doesn't it? No, seriously, that's true. Buck Dharma has said this cowbell sketch completely ruined, sabotaged the dark vibe of Don't Fear the Reaper. I don't know, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. And this is one of those tunes that I can never skip, but in the back of my mind, I am always hearing
more cowbell.
Any opportunity I get to talk about the great Stevie Ray Vaughan, you know I'm gonna take it. I believe that that man is, bar none, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, guitarists of all time. However, it's important to know that your idols can be fallible and not always the right man for the job. That ending solo, that that's Stevie Ray Vaughan. At the time, completely unknown as a guitarist. Well, for the most part. David Bowie saw him play a 1982 gig at the Monterey Jazz Festival in Switzerland, and this was even before Texas Flood with Double Trouble had been released. But Bowie, something clicks in his head. He's so impressed that he wants to do some work with him. And apparently, according to multiple sources, David Bowie was the only one who was enthusiastic about this. Nile Rodgers, who you might know from Chic, was also the producer of this album and is like, are you sure this is the guy you want to go with? He sounds a little too much like Albert King. I don't think that this is going to mesh well. But Bowie went to bat for Stevie Ray Vaughan and said, no, this kid's got something going on. He's going to be on the track. And that's where the problem started. By all accounts, the recording session went pretty well. By Stevie Ray Vaughan's own admission, he came in and just sprayed some Albert King style blues all over this track. Bowie's production crew was even courteous enough to have barbecue ribs shipped in from a Texas barbecue joint to New York so that Vaughn could eat what he wanted and feel comfortable. But it was only after the recording of this tune that everything just sort of went to hell. Stevie Ray Vaughan was supposed to be featured on other David Bowie songs, but there were a lot of problems with Stevie Ray Vaughan's hard partying lifestyle not meshing with the rest of the band. In fact, Stevie Ray Vaughan's wife Lenny ended up getting kicked out of the studio, banned from rehearsals for that exact reason. It started getting really hectic because Stevie Ray Vaughan started feeling bad. He felt that he had a loyalty to his Double Trouble bandmates and just couldn't abandon them to be in David Bowie's touring band. So he pitches, hey, let me take them on tour. I'll open with them and play with you. They told him no. They were literally just treating him like he was another sideman and not a great guitarist with his own band. Like, it got to the point where everybody was saying Stevie Ray Vaughan has to choose between being in David Bowie's band or he's out. He's fired. Now, allegedly, this all came to a head when the music video for Let's Dance dropped and Stevie Ray Vaughan wasn't in it. In fact, at the end, when you hear Stevie Ray Vaughan's guitar solo, you see David Bowie in white gloves mimicking it, miming it. This pissed Stevie Ray Vaughan off to no end. So Stevie Ray Vaughan gets fired. Who fired him? Some people have said Carlos Alomar, Bowie's rhythm guitarist. Some people have said Bowie himself. Some people say Nile Rodgers, which is kind of weird because they became lifelong friends after this recording. But one thing I've noticed is true. When researching this one, I read an interesting piece by John Ballinger, who is a music writer for Premier Guitar. He said that if David Bowie did actually fire Stevie Ray Vaughan, he did the world a favor. Because if they had gotten together and been successful, Stevie Ray Vaughan may have been a sideman and never have become the legend that he is. Think about that, guys. No pride and joy, no Texas Flood, no Little Wing, just him playing fat tones on versions of Suffragette City or Diamond Dogs. Something about that doesn't sit right with me, and I don't think it sits right with anybody. I don't know what else there is to say, but hey man, listen to this sick Stevie Ray Vaughan solo. This is a weird one, but all your favorite rock stars of the 60s, if they lived in England, they might have all been busted by the same cop. And if that sounds weird and a little dubious, I can promise you that it is. Because in 1969, George Harrison and his wife Patty were busted for marijuana possession by a British police sergeant named Norman Clement Pilcher, which is just the perfect 1960s establishment. We gotta bust these hippies and rock star officer name. Like, if you heard that in a hippie movie, you'd be like, that's too on the nose. But he was a real guy who not only busted George Harrison, but, strangely enough, also busted John Lennon at a separate time, and also Donovan, three members of the Rolling Stones, Eric Clapton, and several other rock stars and people involved with the hippie movement in England. And if you're thinking, this same guy all the time, that's weird. Well, it is, because there were numerous rock stars that claimed Pilcher had been the one that framed them, including Clapton, who said that Pilcher had just showed up his house disguised as a mailman and literally just said, hey, I have a special delivery, went in the house and raided. And more people were accusing him of trying to satisfy tabloid newspapers by getting all these rock stars arrested. More sensational headlines, more things to throw at the rock and roll movement, more things to hit the hippie movement with. It's still papers. Now, this all came to a head in 1972 when Norman Pilcher got arrested for perverting the course of justice. And when he was sent to prison, the judge says, you poisoned the wells of criminal justice and did it deliberately. But not to let a bad thing be all bad, the whole Norman Pilcher story has been credited as inspiring a portion of the Beatles song, I Am the Walrus. Semolina Pilchert is believed to be in reference to him. It obviously inspired the 2003 Primus song, Pilcher Squad, and it also inspired Monty Python. Several skits, including the Piranha Brothers sketch, and another sketch where Graham Chapman is playing a cop and he says, I'm charging you with illegal possession of whatever we have down here. But if you want to read his account of the story, you can read his memoirs. It's called Bent Coppers, and it was dropped sometime last year. Though it is truly ironic to put a bow on it, the cop obsessed with taking down hippies and rock and roll stars was the only one in this story who went to prison. Such is life sometimes, especially knowing what we know now. Because if you try to get your name in the newspaper by busting rock and roll stars, you're gonna have a bad time. People are gonna remember the rock stars, but they're not gonna remember Norman Pilcher. Except right now for... Don't look too far into it. I'll let you ponder on whether or not Norman Pilcher planted that weed or it was actually dug up in George Harrison's garden. See, that's weird. So weird. Geez, no wonder he absolutely got roasted on this Primus track here. From 2003's Animals Should Not Try to Act Like People promo de fromage EP, The Pilcher Squad.
March 1969, on return from the store, Patty Harrison found Pilcher Squad waiting at her door. Planting tidbits on the pop star seemed quite the thing to do. Till it landed Pilcher in the bogey in 1972. Sergeant Pilcher, Sergeant Pilcher, that cunning Sergeant Pilcher. He's found a way to make them pay for the deviant things they do and say. Pilcher, Sergeant Pilcher, shoppers attack that Pilcher. He's a dutiful man with his task at hand, and he's bound to ensure with his master plan the purity of the motherland. Sergeant Pilcher!
And as those janky Les Claypool bass tones bring us back to reality, it's time to call it a day on another Liner Note Leftovers. We learned a thing or two, as we always do. The great beef between David Bowie and Stevie Ray Vaughan that, let's face it, worked out pretty well in the end. Speaking of working out in the end, maybe don't try shooting your piano at home. It worked out for Tool, but it ain't gonna probably work out for you. Also, make sure any live death stunt you're gonna do on stage
stage is 100% ready to go before you go, because you might end up gone. It's a good thing Alice Cooper is still with us to tell you that. I will see you all again next Friday for another incarnation of Liner Note Leftovers, but as I always say, my lovelies, always grab life and your vinyl by the edges.
That's a wrap on this week's episode. For more musical discoveries with Dan Soul, head to myloydminsternow.com or subscribe to Liner Note Leftovers wherever you get your podcast fix.